Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
This is Dr. Michael Wilkes with a second opinion. Mrs. Pilper is sick with terminal cancer. She's on dialysis because her kidneys no longer work, and she requires regular transfusions. At the time her heart stopped beating, she'd been in the hospital for 3 weeks, unable or unwilling to eat regular food. Most of her time was spent sleeping. The hospital team who was caring for her had no clear way to determine how much she understood, because she'd only open her eyes for several seconds before she would fall back to sleep. Before she got so sick, she'd expressed strong wishes to be kept alive if there was any chance of recovery. This was consistent with her strong Catholic upbringing. She had defined any chance of recovery to allow for the chance of a miracle cure. As doctors pumped on her chest and her ribs cracked one by one, the team was eager to stop CPR, believing that there was no chance for a meaningful recovery. Even if her heart again started to beat, at best it would only bring her back to where she was a day earlier. One of the doctors shouted, "Hey, there's always a chance for a miracle cure, right?" Another, the doctor doing the compressions, said, "Yeah, the miracle here would be to let this woman die in peace." While there are clear guidelines for when to start CPR, stopping CPR is no easy feat. To be clear, most CPR is not successful. No more than 85% of people who've had CPR ever leave the hospital alive. Many others are left with severe neurologic damage. A recent article in the Journal of Medical Ethics suggests that there are often unconscious biases that may creep into decisions involved in ending CPR. The paper suggests that people judged to be less socially important, say a homeless person or a person with no family or a person with a stigmatized social background, say drug use, may be treated differently than a person, say, from a well-connected family. Disease and age also play a role in how long CPR continues. Sometimes decisions depend on how well we know the patient. Unfortunately, the people providing CPR often arrive from all over the hospital, and they do not know the patient, the patient's condition, or their values. They rely on prior legal documents, and thank goodness on nurses who care for the patient and know their condition, their family, and their wishes. Not long ago, when a heart stopped, CPR and advanced life support was all that could be done. Now there are new experimental therapies, including ways to rapidly cool the body, and new machines that can circulate blood. Will these soon be required if people want all care possible? The world has changed, and CPR is no longer a yes or no decision. So it is even more important for all of us to have careful, documented discussions with our doctors and loved ones about what and how much care is required near the end of life. This is Dr. Michael Wilkes with a second opinion.